So we're starting here a new Mishnah, a new sugya on Daf Kuf Amud Beis on the top. You'll see it line 4.
Noeg
B'Tahorim. The sugya here is about Gid HaNosha, which is a part of the thigh of the animal, and that was also, we'll see, back at the time of Yaakov Avinu. And the question that the Mishnah is addressing here is what kind of animal is included in the Isur Gid HaNosha. We have two categories of animals. We have what's called a Tahora, which is a kosher animal, and we have a Tmeya, which is a non-kosher animal. And the Torah in Parshas Shmini dedicates an entire parasha to define and classify animals either as kosher or non-kosher.
Right. Now, so that's the actual intrinsic to the animal as opposed to a novella, which is a whole...
Right, we're talking now about species, you know, the species of animals. Great. So let's say, for example, there's a Gid HaNosha in a chazir, a pig. So the Mishnah establishes, according to the Tanakhama, we'll see Rabbi Yehuda argues, that noig b'tahora, that the Isur Gid HaNosha applies to a kosher animal, and not to a tmeya, not to an animal which is tmeya like a chazir, and the Mishnah doesn't give any reasons for that.
That's also I think I'm getting confused.
Before you get confused, just focus on this for a second.
Yeah.
There are two ways of understanding why a Gid HaNosha only applies to a kosher animal. One way is to say that the Torah only prohibited part of the animal, meaning the Torah was saying that the balance of the animal, everything except for this sinew, this gid, this sciatic nerve, or whatever the gid is, everything is mutter. In the case of a non-kosher species, everything is also. So the Torah didn't even have to bother prohibiting the gid.
Because
and therefore,
everything is, right.
Yeah, and when the Torah said, the Pasuk says that lo so as Gid HaNosha, what the Torah is really saying is eat the rest of the animal but not the Gid.
Mm.
And therefore, the reason is clearly that we're not talking about a non-kosher animal. You can't say about a non-kosher animal, don't eat the Gid, eat the rest of the animal.
Mm.
The other way of explaining our Mishnah, which is a more, you know, universal halachic principle, and that's called Ein Isur Chalal Isur. I don't know if you ever heard of it.
No.
Okay, Ein Isur Chalal Isur means that if an object becomes Asur, then you can't impose a second Isur on one Isur. Once it's Asur, and it can never be Asur twice. It can only be Asur once. Now,
Ein Tochen, but Tochen. It's a considered...
Right. It's Ein Isur Chalal Isur, which means that if this animal is a Tmeya, then it can't become Asur because of another lav, another Isur in the Torah.
So why do we need it?
Oh, so Rabbi Yehuda, if you take a look, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Af Bitmea. Rabbi Yehuda says that even a non-kosher animal has an Isur Gid HaNosha because it's not Ein Isur Chal Isur. It means both Isurim were Chal simultaneously. The animal is born as a non-kosher species. It can never become a kosher animal. And at the same time, the Gid can never be anything but a Gid. And therefore, it's us. So you had two Isurim that emerged Mileda from the birth of the animal. That's not Ein Isur Chal Isur, says Rabbi Yehuda. Meaning, according to the Tanakhama, he says Ein Isur Chal Isur applies in the case of Behemoth Tmeya with regard to Gid HaNosha. Why? Because once the animal is a Tmeya, it's Asur because it's a Behemoth Tmeya. The Torah already asked of the species. There's a new Isur, conceptually, which is called Gid HaNosha. We're not going to impose this object, which you're looking on, this sinew, is already a Behemoth Tmeya. You can't add another Isur to it because we have a rule called Ein Isur Chal Isur. So you want to topple Gid HaNosha. Again, we're going to get into this. I'm just giving you a little bit of an introduction. You know,
Right. That
somebody
got this
tray
for animal.
Yeah. Well, one second.
One second.
No, you're right. You're right. Let you know, there's such a flood of issues here. We have to sort it all out. You know, let's assume that Gid HaNosha is Asur v'Achila, correct?
Uh-huh.
And that's it. Right now, you could sell it. You can give it to a guy. You can feed it to your animal. It's Mutar B'Ano. Let's just go simple.
Okay.
So the Isur Achila of Gid HaNosha really was proceeded, if I could use that word, it was proceeded, there was already an Isa in this Gid Anashim because it was a Behemet Tmeya. The whole animal was Asa, so you didn't have to add, well, this part of the animal is Asa because I call it a Gid Anashim. You want to add another Isa to Gid Anashim, it's already Asa, Vitoris Behemet Tmeya. That's the sheet of the Tanakhama. Comes along Rabbi Yehuda, and he says, wait a minute. Ein Iser Chal Iser requires a certain sequence, a chronological order. First you had Iser A, now you want to topple Iser B over Iser A. Then we say Ein Iser Chal Iser. But if the two Iserim emerged simultaneously, it was both a Behemet Tmeya and a Gid Anashim. And really when you look at the Gid Anashim, says Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah, what you're looking at is both Behemet Tmeya and a Gid Anashim at the same time. This Gid is also part of the Behemet Tmeya. Mm-hmm. And insofar as it's part of the Behemet Tmeya, it's also Vitoris Behemet Tmeya. But at the same time, it has its own identity as a Gid Anashim. It has a double identity.
Okay.
We used to talk about Superman and Clark Kent, right? Has a double identity, right? What was his name? The spy number 7. What was his name? James Bond, you know, 007. He had a double identity, you know? And here also, it has a double identity, says Rabbi Yehuda. It's true that it's a Behemet Tmeya. It's no different than the leg of the Behemet Tmeya or the head of the Behemet Tmeya. But it's also a Gid Anashim at the same time.
All right. Okay.
So don't tell me that a Behemet Tmeya is mufkas excluded from being a Gid Anashim. They both emerge simultaneously. So again, this is just before we get to learn the Mishnah.
Really, the only practical application is if the different dinim apply to them.
Well, for example, even before we get into the different dinim, the question is, if somebody chas shalom eats the Gid Anashim of a non-kosher animal, how many sets of malchus does he get? Does he get 39 lashes for eating a Behemet Tmeya? That would be the sheet of the Tanakhama. And according to the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda, since there's an Isur Gid Anashim even in a Behemet Tmeya, he'll get two sets of malchus. They're double Isurim, and as we said before, double entity, a double identity.
Yeah.
That's according to Rabbi Yehuda. Now, let's take a look at the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that according to the Tanakhama, noheg bebehemah Torah, it means rak bebehemah Torah. It only applies to behemah Torah. You have a kosher piece of meat, a kosher animal, a kosher species. The Torah says, don't eat the Gid Anashim. The eno noheg bitmeah. But it doesn't apply, says the Tanakhama, to a non-kosher animal. That non-kosher animal was osur b'achila, every single part of it, including the Gid Anashim. And therefore the Torah didn't come along to asa the Gid Anashim, in this case of a species of a non-kosher animal, with a second Iser. The Torah's not interested in adding Isurim. The Torah wants to be mechadish a new Iser, which otherwise, if it had not been Gid Anashim, it would have been mutter. That's the Shita of the Tanakh. Comes along Rabbi Yehuda, Omar Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Af Bitmeya. Now, the question is going to be, what do you mean Af Bitmeya? I mean, what about the principle of Ein Iser Chal Al Iser? Now, the Gemara is going to tell us that this question of Ein Iser Chal Al Iser with regard to Gid Anashim overlaps with a whole other issue. How do we view the Gid Anashim? Do we view the Gid Anashim as part of the animal? Every law and every din that applies to the animal applies to the Gid as well. Why not? Or do we say no? The Gid is a separate entity. In the Lashon HaGemara, it's Eitz B'Alma. It's like a piece of wood. Why? According to one Man D'Omer in the Gemara, and we discussed it in the past, it's called Ein Begidin B'Nosein Tam. Meaning, every part of the animal has a Tam. The Tam of a Chazir is the Tam of a Chazir. Gid Anashim, because it's such a tough piece of meat, doesn't have a Tam to it. And that means if you cook it with other pieces of meat, let's say kosher piece of meat, it will not give off Tam. The normal halacha that we need Bittul does not apply. There's no requirement to Bittul according to the Man D'Omer who says Ein Begidin B'Nosein Tam. And we view the Gid Anashim as what? As Eitz B'Alma. And the Torah said, don't eat that Eitz. In other words, the animal now is divided up into two parts. 90% of the animal is called Basar. 10% of the animal or 2% of the animal, whatever it is called git. And git is not basar. So the dinim that apply
to... It is the sin, translated sin.
I don't know. We'll have to get back to that. Today, you know, this is just an introduction. We're not into the whole biology of it. You know, we got to go very slowly. Something called the sciatic nerve. I don't want to get into it now. It's a whole to do. But be that as it may, we're going to deal with git as an abstract concept. There's part of the animal called the git. One man the omer holds, ain begidin beno sein tam. The git is not basar. It doesn't share the tam and the basar. It's a separate, independent entity. It's inside the animal, but it's separate from the animal. For example, even if the animal were asur b'hana, the git itself might be mutar b'hana. Even if the animal was asur b'hana, the git might be mutar, or just the reverse, even if the animal was mutar b'hana, it could be the git is asur b'hana. There are new dinim that apply to the git. The git is a separate entity. And in halachic terms, it should be viewed as a separate independent entity. If that be the case, then it's very possible that the principle of Ein Isa Chal Iser has no application to git anasha. Because Ein Isa Chal Iser means that this git was already part of the basar of this chazir. But if I view Ein Begidim B'nosin Tam, the git is only at Eitz B'Alma, it's a separate entity, that it was never included in the general Iser of basar chazir. So let me just...
I can remove it?
I don't know. Let me just read to you.
Oh, this is your...
Yeah, no, I want to just read to you one line over here, so we again, because you know when we work together, I can photocopy a few, but it's not that extensive.
No,
you're happy to listen. So he says the following. He says, "Lemadi Omar Yesh Beginim Beno Saint Tam." If you hold Yesh Beginim Beno Saint Tam, and the Gid is part of the Basar, then this Gid was already Asur because it was a Behemoth Meah. And now you're eating another Easter. That's a problem. Ain Easter Chal Easter. Aval Amad Yomer Ain Beginim Beno Saint Tam. Ain Easter Mitzad Achilas Behemet Mea. When you eat the Gid, you do not incur a violation of Behemet Mea. And therefore, the halacha, the principle of Ain Easter Chal Easter, doesn't apply. So even in Behemet Mea, it's quite possible that the Gid would become Asur. Why? Because the Gid would not be Asur as a qua, as a Behemet Tmeya. It's only Asur because of the new Iser of Gid Anasha. Ulefize Tzrich Levash Atam, who Mishum Shemisir B'Soro Mutar, is Gido Asur. Klom B'lomdur Ma'posal Kein Lo Yoch B'nei Yisrael Gid Anasha, She'ein Iser Achilas Gid Anasha El Be'Behema She'B'Soro Mutar. In other words, if let's say we go back to the Tanakhama, you remember that the Tanakhama says that the Gid Anasha of a Behemet Meya is not called Gid. Why not? Why isn't it also a Torah's Gid? So we gave two explanations. One explanation is because the Torah says, Al Kein Lo Yochlu B'nei Yisrael Es Gid Anasha, meaning the balance, the rest of the animal is Mutar, but the Gid is also. The other explanation we gave is because there's a principle called Ein Iser Chalis. Now, if I hold that ain't beginning but no same time, and therefore the git is not asur midin behemet meya, then there's no principle here of ain't isur chalisa. And if that be the case, the only way of explaining the Tanakhama, if he holds ain't beginning but no same time, is by saying that he learned it from the pasuk. The pasuk says, Al kein lo yochlu b'nei Yisrael is what? Es gid hanoshe, which means that the Torah prohibited the gid, but the rest of the animal is mutter, and that only applies to a kosher animal, a behemah tahura. So it's interesting now. We have two different explanations in the Tanakhama. One explanation is to say that Tanakhama learned it from a pasuk. The other explanation is to say Tanakhama derived it from the general universal principle of Eini Sechaliser. And it's all going to...
What's the sfora deriving it from that point of view?
Because the Torah says you can only have one Easter at a time. And if Yesh Begidim in Osein Tam, which means that the Gid is part of the Basar, it's already Asur, B'Toras, under the category of Behemet Meah. And the Torah doesn't add an Iser onto an already pre-existing Iser.
Uh-huh.
That's called Ein Iser Chalis. And that could have been one valid way of interpreting our Tanakhama. But the only problem is that you're clashing with the Man Yom who says Ein Begidim in Osein Tam. Because if Ein Begidim in Osein Tam, then this Gid would not be also B'Toras Behemet Meah, because it's a separate entity. And then you're going to have to give a second explanation, alternative, as to why the Mishnah in the Tanakhama says that there's no Iser Giranosha in a Bei Mitmea. And the answer is going to be because he learned it from a Pasuk. Mm-hmm. Good? So that's what we have so far. Okay. Now look at the language of the Mishnah. The Mishnah is a little bit odd. It says Noeg b'tahora v'eino Noeg b'tmeya. And that sounds like there's no Isur mitzad mitzad Giranosh. There's no, it's right? It's Eino Noeg. When it says Eino Noeg b'behemet meya, that language seems to indicate that there's no Isur behemet meya with regard to the Gid.
Well, what does the Mishnah mean here by using
the Mishnah? I'm sorry, there's no, I made a mistake here. There's no Isur Giranosh with regard to the Gid of a behemet meya. Right? That's what it says in the Mishnah. And we're suggesting one possibility is because Ein Isur Chal Isur.
Right. Now, well,
Whenever the question is what situations or how wide the scope of an Iser is, what when does it apply, when does it not apply, they always use the word noheg. It's noheg, it applies in case X.
Really,
it's eino noheg in case
really
Y.
Apply.
It's right. Really, it's active, it applies. That's what the word noheg means. So now we have this kasha from a Gemara in Yevamos. The Gemara in Yevamos is the main sugya of Ein Iser Chal Al Iser. And the Gemara establishes in Yevamos that even though the second Iser you don't get punished for, you'll only get punished for one Iser, so you'll get only one set of Malkus and not two. But nevertheless, you really violate both Iser. We can't give you a punishment for the second Iser, but there is an Avera. And the Gemara says, Nafkamina Lakovro ben Rishoim Gemur. Now there were the different plots in the parts of the cemetery, you know. In one part of the cemetery they bury the regular Rishoim, you know. And then in the other part of the cemetery they designated for the real McCoy Rishoim Gemur. So if a person violated only one lav, one Isur, then he's in a regular Rishoim. But if he violated two Isurim, they put him in the Chelka, in the section that's designated for the Rishoim Gemur. So the Gemara says that even when Ein Iser Chal Iser, you nevertheless violate the second Iser as well, and therefore we're going to bury you amongst the Rishayim Gemur. Here the Mishnah says, Noeg b'tahora v'eino noeg b'tmeya. It sounds like there's no Iser at all of Gidanosh in a Bei Mitmeya. Not that the Iser is there, but we're not going to give you a second set of Malkus as an Onesh, but rather the Iser doesn't even get off the ground, it doesn't even apply in a Bei Mitmeya. And that's very difficult if you hold that we're dealing with any Iser Chal Iser. So once again, the better way, the simpler way of interpreting our Tanakhama for a number of reasons would say that Eino Noeg Bei Mitmeya is because the Torah asid the Gid and never asid the rest of the Basar. And that's the way to go, because the Pasuk says, Al Kain Yochlu B'nei Yisrael as Gid Anoshe, and that's called Misha B'saru Mutar is Gido Asur. If the Basar is Asur, then the Gid is, if the Basar is Mutar, the Gid is Asur. If the Gid is Asur, the rest of the Basar is Mutar. But if the Basar is already Asur, then the Gid is Mutar, as far as Gid Anoshe is concerned. Okay. Now, Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah is going to support his opinion with a proof. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Vahalo mi bnei Yaakov nesar gid anoshe. At what point in time was the Iser gid anoshe applicable? When did it emerge in Jewish history? You know, most of our Torah emerged with what? With Har Sinai, correct? When the Torah was given. But there are a few exceptions to the rule, and there are a few mitzvahs and Isur that were given before Har Sinai.
The fight of Yaakov Avinu with the
Malach. And there, the Torah tells Yaakov not to eat the Gid Anoshe. Now, Adayin Behemot Meyam Uteris Lahem. At that point in time, the Torah didn't give us Parsha Shmini with all the different categories of Isur, which behemoths, which species of animals are non-kosher. So in that case, you know, there's no difference here between a Bema Tmeya and a Bema Tahora.
It was almost except a Gid Anoshe.
So when the Torah said Gid Anoshe, that would apply to every single kind of animal. So how can you possibly argue, says Rabbi Yehuda, that the gin anasha only applies to one kind of animal and not to another kind of animal? It applies to cattle and it doesn't apply to swine. How can you say such a thing? The Isser was formulated and presented at the time of Bnei Yaakov, and they existed when there was no difference between one category of an animal and another category of an animal. So obviously the Isser gin anasha is applicable to every single kind of an animal. Let's read it inside again. So the Isser gin anasha is considered much more severe than all the other Isurim, like a non-kosher animal, because it was given to Yaakov Avinu as an Isur Gid Anosh even before there was an Isur Behemot Tmeya. So even though Yaakov Avinu and his tribe technically could eat every single animal, right, even a Behemot Tmeya, because it wasn't yet Asur at that time, nevertheless the Torah prohibited to Yaakov and his tribe Gid Anosh. It means, which is more chamor, Behemot Tmeya or Gid Anosh?
Why did they?
I didn't get an answer from you. I give you two options, A or B.
Right?
Yeah. Which is more chomer, eating a non-kosher piece of meat or eating the gid anasha?
Well, in the context that we just spoke,
correct.
Gid
anasha,
because that was my answer from.
Even when you were allowed to eat behemot tmeya, the Torah still couldn't tolerate you eating the gid anasha. So even when the Torah tolerated behemot tmeya, his gid anasha was prohibited. When in history? At the time of the Bnei Yaakov. If that be the case, then now that we have the Isur behemot tmeya after Matan Torah, then the Isur gid anasha should still be intact, because since that Isur gid anasha existed independent of the Isur behemot tmeya, why should the Isur behemot tmeya come along and undermine and uproot the Isur gid anasha? And basically what we're saying is that even if in general any sechalisa, the exception to the rule is going to be gid anasha. Why? Because gid anasha is so chomor that it applies even without that iser. So if it applied to that case even without the iser, it's going to apply even in the case of a behemot tmeya after Matan Torah.
Is this now a mitzvah only in part of Tariq? Is it also for Shiva Mitzvah B'nai Noach?
No, it's only for Klal Yisrael. You know, the Bnei Noach, they only have one non-kosher food, that's called
a living.
Omru lo, so the Chachamim reject the proof of Rabbi Yehuda. Why do they reject the proof of Rabbi Yehuda? What's the counter argument to defend their position? B'sinai Nesar, the Isur Gid Anasha only emerged at Har Sinai, not at the time of Bnei Yaakov. Your premise, Rabbi Yehuda, that the Isur Gid Anasha applied and was active historically at the time of Bnei Yaakov, I question that. You'll ask me, but the Torah says, Al Kein Lo Yochlu Bnei Yisrael Es Gid Anasha. Elo Shenichtav Bimkomo. It was written by the Torah in its context, so that we understand why the Torah finds the Gid Anasha repulsive, if you will. Why did the Torah prohibit Gid Anasha? The answer is because of the whole Maisa of Yaakov and the Sorah Shel Esav. But if you ask me, when did the Gid Anasha become Asur? At what time did the Isur emerge? The answer is at Har Sinai. There was never an Isur of Gid Anasha that preceded Har Sinai. The Torah was not answering in the Pasuk Al Kein Lo Yochlu Bnei Yisrael Es Gid Anasha the question of when is the Isur Chal, but rather the question of why is the Isur Chal.
Like when it was Chal,
it's only after Har Sinai, according to the Chacham. There was also
how do they then deal with can we argue that it was only to Yaakov? Was it Yaakov and Esau, or just to Yaakov?
Well, not to Esau, for sure. It says, Al Kein Lo Yochlu Bnei Yisrael Es Gid Anasha. The Yisrael is a reference to Yaakov. That you know, that there's no Isur of Gid Anasha to a Goy.
Right.
Gid Anasha has Goyim have only one Isur.
But if that
Eivor Menachah.
That halacha predates Har Sinai.
No.
But it doesn't mean
according to Rabbi Yehuda, you're right. But not according to Chachamim. The Chachamim say that this halach that Gid Arosh is Osir does not predate Har Sinai. No Isir predates Har Sinai. It's certainly not Gid Arosh. You'll ask me, why does the Torah write in, where is it? What Perek is
it? I guess it's trying to
remember what Perek it is. I forgot.
It basically tries to say, this will be a din once I reveal myself to you.
Correct. When I give the mitzvahs of the Torah, the Tariq mitzvahs.
Everything they were learning in the yeshiva, Shiva's Hashem Va'eva, all everything they were learning, were all dinim that were to be. It's like us learning, going back and learning, Kohanim, learning the Kohuna, learning the whole Seder of the Kohanim. For when the Beis Hamikdash Shlishi comes around.
Right.
But it's not applicable now. Is that a similar analogy?
Perhaps, yeah, there is some sort of element of similarity, but I think you'd say it's slightly different. It's not that they were learning the laws of Gid Anosha because it would come into being. That could be true about all of the mitzvahs that you say they learned in Shem Ve'ever. But this point is something different. Al Kain, therefore lo yochlu b'nei Yisrael's Gid Anosha, meaning Moshe Rabbeinu gives the Isur Gid Anosha at Har Sinai, and that's why it's meaningful, and it's effective, and it's active. But if you ask me, why did the Torah prohibit Gid Anosha? For seven, the Torah didn't have to prohibit Gid Anosha. And again, we're talking about Gid Anosha according to Chachamim here of a kosher animal. So why did the Torah prohibit Gid Anosha?
It was because of Yaakov Avinu.
The answer is, it's because of Yaakov Avinu. That's the answer to the question.
Where was the Masorah originally? I know this is off our duff. The Masorah for Oman. When was the Masorah? Adam Arishon, there's a source that Adam Arishon was taught all the halachas that were going to be. He wasn't Yehudi. He wasn't chiyuv any of them. Like we talk about the Shem and Aver, that was the yeshiva. What were they teaching them? What were they learning there?
Like you said before, I think very well. They were learning the mitzvahs that would in the future be given and be binding. They were also learning the shiva mitzvahs b'nei noach that were binding already then. Because the Bnei Noach were already bound and commanded in the Sheva Mitzvahs from the time of Adam HaRishon. And Klal Yisrael got the balance of the Torah at Har Sinai. But where the Maskana here of this Mishnah is, according to the Chachamim at least, that we do not apply the principle of, you know what, this Isur was Chal at the time of Bnei Yaakov. That principle we will not accept.
Mm-hmm. Put in that way, it's understand. Yeah. You understand. It makes sense.
Yeah. The question that the Mefarshim are bothered by is, why did the Torah bother to explain this mitzvah and its reason? We don't find in general that the Torah explained all the mitzvahs and their reasoning. For example, the Torah did not explain why a pig is a non-kosher animal. So why did the Torah feel compelled to explain? The Torah is telling us, according to the Chachamim and our Mishnah, that the reason why the God commanded that the Gid Anosha is repulsive, it's unacceptable, is because of the story of Yaakov and Esau. Mm-hmm. Correct? Why did the Torah feel compelled to reveal to us the meaning of and the cause of a mitzvah? We don't find that by other mitzvahs. I mean, even here in Kashrus, we don't find that the Torah explained to us why pig is non-kosher. I mean, the Rambam tried to say that it has certain diseases, but you know,
connected to a significant
episode
in the Torah. A pig. There was nothing happened with a pig. Yeah, you might argue about a donkey, or because we saw donkeys. But the pig just were. Oh, by the way, pig's not kosher. But there was no mice, nothing revolving a pig where we could bring it out. Right. Just happens there was a mice involving an injury to the gid, and so that is why it's. Although
we still, if you want to answer that question, we actually really don't know why. Just because he, we're talking about a human being who was hit on his leg and the Gid Anosha, and he was a.
Right.
But what's that got to do with us eating kosher and...
For that, we would really have to study, you know, all the mafarshim.
But the answer is it doesn't give you an answer.
Right. Simply because, you know, all we did so far is the Mishnah, which is great, but I think we should learn a shtick Gemara, you know.
Yeah.
So again, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Isur Gid Anosha applies even in a Beimat Meir, correct?
Yeah.
Even though, again, that Gid Anosha would be prohibited, Bitoras. The Torah is Beimat Meir, but the Torah wanted to add another Isur onto this Gid, and that's called Gid Anosha. So the Gemara asks, "V'savar Rabbi Yehuda she'isur chal al isur?" Is it true that Rabbi Yehuda actually holds that one isur could be chal on another isur? That's unacceptable. V'asanya, we learned in a brisa, and this is the case of a person who eats a nevela. Let's say you have an oaf, right? There are different classes and categories of birds. Some birds, of course, are tmeim, and you're not allowed to eat them. Other birds are tahorim, and you're allowed to eat them. Of course, you have to shech them, but you're allowed to eat. You're allowed to eat an oftar after shechita. Now, what happens if you didn't shech the oftar? The species itself is kosher, but it died without shechita. So the halacha is that a person who eats the nevela of an oaf tahar is not allowed to go into the Beis HaMikdash, because since it died as a nevela, it's mitame. It's mitame.
What do you mean he's not allowed to go?
If somebody eats a nevela, then he becomes tame.
He becomes tame.
Right.
It makes him
tame. Right. Sorry, I didn't clarify.
And that needs the paraduma, or it can be done regularly with a...
The only time I need a paraduma, to the best of my knowledge, is if he had...
Tumas mes.
Oh. Right, excellent. Is Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Rabbi Yehuda says in this brisa, Yochol, I would think, Tehei nevelas of tame mitame. I might think that just like the case of an nevelas of tahar, which we said is metame, is so too the nevela of an of tame is also metame. Now, what does metame mean? Number one, metame means begadim. That's when you eat the nevela, then the clothing that you're wearing at that time becomes tame. As well as you. And at what moment in time do you become tumah? Do you contract this tumah? Is bebeis habliya, as soon as the of tumah goes down your throat, that's already called an achila. And according to Rabbi Yehuda's Havamina, the halacha of tumas achilas nevela applies not just to a tar, but in this Havamina, even to a tame. Even to a tame means a non-kosher bird.
That's the question. So a nevela and a non-kosher animal are both considered metame.
Correct.
So it's the same effect.
Even though this nevela is a non-kosher animal, it's the nevela of a non-kosher species, nevertheless, I might think in this yachol that it's metame in the same way that the nevela of an oftar is a metame kosher bird. Talmud Lomer, the Torah tells us, a pasuk by Yikra Chaf Beis, nevela utrefa lo yochal litama ba. Now, what does that pasuk mean? The Torah is warning us not to eat the nevela of a bird, nevela.
What? That's a pasuk.
That's a pasuk in Vayikra, Sefer Vayikra.
Okay.
You have to believe me now that it's a pasuk. I'm not trying to mislead you. I'm really telling you the honest to goodness truth. This is a pasuk. Okay? And the question is, what is this pasuk teaching me? Rabbi Yehuda maintains that this pasuk is going to teach me something very, very important.
When it distinguishes nevela from treifa, it seems to be two different...
Right, those are two different categories. But then it says lo yochal, because if you eat this nevela, and we'll see about treifa in a minute, is litama, but you become tame. So a person eats the nevela, in this case the Torah is talking about a bird, and through the eating of the bird that was a nevela, it becomes tame, which means he's not allowed to go into the migdash, he's not allowed to eat kodshim. So the Chazal say, take a look at this pasuk. The pasuk is describing Misha Isuro Mishum Baltochal Nevela. The Torah is talking about a case where you already are enjoined from eating this oaf because it's a nevela. And now the Torah is telling me, Litamaba. So Litamaba is a reference to a nevela. And that means a nevela, which of an oaf tar. How do I know it's an oaf tar? Because it's also because it's a nevela. Mm-hmm. Yatza Zed, this is coming to exclude the case of a nevela of an oaf tummy, because there it's not also because of the nevela. Any surah mishum bal tochal nevela mishum bal tochal tmea. It's a non-kosher animal. The Torah enjoins me from eating a non-kosher bird. And it has nothing to do with the fact that it's an avela. The fact that it's an avela is irrelevant, whether you shechted it or didn't shecht it. You could shecht it with a satmar shechita from Stamford Hill. It wouldn't make one bit of difference because the oaf is an oaf tameh. It's a non-kosher bird.
Yeah, you can't.
You can't shecht it. So why are you telling me that lo yochal l'tameh but because it's an avela? If it's an oaf tameh, don't tell me that you can't eat it because it's an avela. In other words, the Torah is telling me that which achila is going to be mitame you, the achila of an avela, which you're not allowed to eat. And Rabbi Yehuda is saying, why can't you eat? Why are you forbidden from eating this? Because it is a nevela, died without shechita. Now, what kind of oaf is asur b'achila because it died without shechita?
So, what kind of oaf is...
Write this down, if you can. What kind of an oaf is asur b'achila because it is a nevela, meaning it died without shechita? And you have two choices here. You can talk about an oaf tameh or an oaf tar. Meaning a kosher bird or a non-kosher bird. What kind of bird is prohibited when it dies because there was no shechita and it became a nevela? Nevela equals no shechita.
No shechita, right.
So what kind of bird? There are two types of birds. All birds in the world. There are thousands of species of birds.
Right.
But they can all be reduced to two fundamental categories as far as the halacha is concerned.
Well,
it's not a biological
distinction. Permitted.
Correct. Permitted birds, we call them kosher birds, and that's an oftar.
Right.
And then we have non-permitted birds, which are prohibited, and that's called an oftame. Which kind of bird fits the following distinction amongst those two categories? It died, it's an avela, there was no shechita, and therefore it's also because it died without shechita.
What you're saying is that the nevela is what's
generating the Iser.
The
Iser is
because
nevela. And now you ate this nevela. You know what, buddy? You became tummy. The Torah is saying because you ate this prohibited nevela, which means, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that it's also because it's a nevela, i.e. it didn't have shechita. That's why it's
metame. The concept of nevela to a non-kosher animal.
Correct. They just don't mesh together.
But isn't that obvious from this process anyway?
It wasn't so obvious to me.
Traver is a non-kosher animal. Lo yapo, the tomepo.
Okay.
It seems to me a very obvious distinction between the two.
But in any event, what underlies this understanding and this formulation of Rabbi Yehuda? The background to it, the fundamental principle on which it's based, is called Ein Iser Chalal Iser. Why? Because you're telling me that if the oaf tummy dropped dead without shechita, then it's not an avela. Why is it an avela? Maybe the Torah would say, now that it died without shechita, the body of this animal is also under two categories, under two distinct isurim. Number one, it's a behemoth, it's an oftame. And number two, it's also an avela.
Why do we even need to bring it to second category?
Because we want to bury you in the right cemetery. That's why. We want to know how many different violations are you guilty of. The Gemara in Makkos, for example, has a case where a person eats a certain creature and he violates five different isurim.
I was just going on that.
If an oftame drops dead,
more
right, if it bugs, right? If an oaf tummy drops dead and you eat its meat, how many isurim did you violate?
Uh-huh.
So if you forget about the principle, ignore the principle of any isur chalalis, then you violated two different isurim. Number one, the carcass of this oaf is called a nevela. Number two, it's also an oaf tummy. It's a raven or whatever animal, whatever bird it is, right?
But that's on the assumption that you're taking the treifa bird and you're trying to shecht it. Therefore, you have, if that's to say, it's a one, is, well, I shechted it. Yeah, but it's not a kosher animal.
That's a good, okay? That's a good question. In other words, what's the happening? Forget about any schalisa.
Mostly,
can there be shechita on a non-kosher bird? I don't know.
Non-kosher animals being killed in any whole
right.
way.
We're going to have to, for that question, it's a brilliant question, we're going to have to wait a while. But what we're ready for now is the following. Rabbi Yehuda understands that the pshat in this pasuk nevelu treflo yochal l'tama ba is telling you the following: when is the achila of this nevela mitameyu? And you're not allowed to eat kodshim, you can't go to the mikdash, etc., etc. That's only when you ate something that it was asur because it's an avela. Had it not been an avela, it would be mutter to eat. But because it was asur b'tar it's an avela, you're not allowed to eat it. Now it's metameyu if you eat it. Oh, that only applies, says Rabbi Yehuda, to a kosher bird. But a non-kosher species of birds, that's not asur b'toras nevela, that's asur b'toras of tame. Why? Because ein iser chal al iser. So now we come full swing back to our Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda says in our Mishnah that a behemoth tmeya has an iser gidanoshe, even though it's already also b'toras nevela, b'toras behemah tmeya. What about the principle of ein iser chal iser? So Gemara says v'chi tamei. Maybe you'll answer the stira and reconcile the two by saying kasavar ein begidin b'nosein tam. Maybe Rabbi Yehuda happens to hold that the gid has no tam to it. Therefore, it's not basar, and if it's not basar, it's not also b'toras behemah tmeya. It's Eitz B'Alma. And if it's Eitz B'Alma, then it doesn't come under the Iser of Behemoth Tmeya. And therefore the only Iser you can talk about in the case of Gidah Nasha is the Iser of Gidah Nasha. So this has nothing to do with Ein Iser Chal Iser. U'B'Tmeya Nami Iser Gid Ika Iser Tuma Leka. In the case of a Gidah Nasha, then B'Tmeya, there's an Iser Gid. There's an Iser Gid in a Behemoth Tmeya. And that's about all you have, is an Iser Gid. You don't have an Iser Behemoth Tmeya because, you know why? Because it's Ein Begidin B'no Sein Tam. If it's Ein Begidin B'no Sein Tam, we don't view and define the Gid as part of the Basar, as part of the animal. And therefore the Iser Behemoth Tmeya doesn't apply to the Gid Anosha. The only Iser that could apply to the Gid Anosha is the Gid Anosha itself, so there's no problem here of any Iser Chal Iser, because the only Iser that could apply here is Gidah Noshe. So the Gemara asks, V'sava Rabbi Yehuda ain't beginning b'no sein tam. I'm going to prove to you that Rabbi Yehuda happens to be of the opinion that yesh beginning b'no sein tam. V'asanya, we learned in a brisa, ha'ochel Gidah Noshe shel behemot mea. If a man eats the Gidah Noshe of a pig, for example, is Rabbi Yehuda mechayev shtayim? Rabbi Yehuda says you violate two different Isurim and you get two sets of Malkas. Mm-hmm. You violate the Isur of Behemoth Tmeya as well as the Isur of Gidah Nasha, Rabbi Shimon Poter. So you see clearly that Rabbi Yehuda holds Yesh Begidim and Osei Tam, otherwise there would be no Chiyuv for Behemoth Tmeya. So the Gemara says, Liolam Kasavra Yesh Begidim and Osei Tam. I have to admit to you, you have clear cut evidence that according to Rabbi Yehuda, Yesh Begidim and Osei Tam, and therefore the Gid of a Behemoth Tmeya is also a Torah, Behemoth Tmeya, and you get Shtayim, you get two sets of Malkus. But nevertheless, Kasavar Noheg Bishlil the Iser Gid the Iser Tuma Behade Hadadi Kaasi. Now, what's a shlil? First of all, let's just translate the ivra, as we say. The word shlil means an embryo. In other words, when we open the mother's stomach and we find that there's an embryo inside, that's called a shlil. Okay? Now, what's the story?
Well, same with any embryo.
Every embryo is called a shlil. Mm-hmm. And the question is, what happens in the case of a gid anoshe of a shlil? And Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that gid anoshe applies the isur yidanush applies even to the shliel, even to the ubar, even to the ubar, the embryo that we find in its mother's stomach. Why? Where did he come to that conclusion? The isur gid v'isur tuma behadi hadadi kaasi, which means that there are two isurim that are chal simultaneously on this gid. And one is the isur tuma, right? And the other is the isur gid. Because the isur gid anasha emerges from the moment that this animal was created, so to speak, when this gid came into existence, came into being. And at that moment that this ubar came into being, then if it's a non-kosher animal, guess what? You have two isurim here that are simultaneous. And therefore, the whole question of Ein Isur Chalal Isur is totally inapplicable. So what was your kasha? Your kasha was, how could a Behemah Tmeya become Asur B'Torah's Gid? We have a principle of Ein Isur Chalal Isur. We've already proven that Rabbi Yehuda embraces the principle. He accepts the principle of Ein Gid, Ein Isur Chalal Isur. And that's why he said in the case of an Ov Tomei, there is no Isur of Achilas Tumah. In the case of an Avela, these are no Isur in Avela. So here, we are really...
Oh, he's saying there's no Isur?
Remember that Rabbi Yehuda, again, we don't have time now to review the whole spiel, but if you get a chance, you'll review what we learned in this Braisa, that Nevelas Of Tame is a problem, right? You can't add the Isur of Nevela to an Of Tame, because the Of Tame was also even before it became an Avela. So we apply, according to review, the principle of Ein Isur Chalal Isur, and therefore the Torah says that the Nevela is Metame, it means the Nevela of an Of Tar, because there is no Isur Nevela in the case of an Of Tame, because Ein Isur Chalal Isur. Oh, if that be the case of Ein Isur Chalal Isur, how can Rabbi Yehuda say that the Gid Anoshe of a Behemah Tmeya is also B'Torah's Gid, and you get two sets of Malkus? What happened to the principle of Ein Isur Chalal Isur? And the Gemara answers, because both Isurim, Gid and Behemah Tmeya, Behadi Hadadi Kasi, if these two Isurim emerge simultaneously, at the very same moment, you can synchronize the Chalos HaYisur of two different Isurim, then you cannot apply the principle of Ein Isur Chalal Isur. Ein Isur Chalal Isur means once the first Isur is Chal, it already took up the space, there's no empty space for a second Isur to be Chal. But if two Isurim jump on an object at the same time, then you're stuck with both Isurim. So the Gemara doesn't like this. Umi Matzis Amrit, can you really tell me that according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Isur Gid Anash is Noeg B'Shlil, it applies even to an embryo. Vasnan, we have a Mishnah later on. No, I'm sorry, there's a Mishnah earlier in Masechta Chulin on Peites, and the Mishnah says that the Isur Gid Anash is Noeg B'Shlil, according to Tanakama, but Rabbi Yehuda Omer Eino Noeg B'Shlil. No. Rabbi Yehuda rejects it. There's no Gid Anosha in a Shlil. Vechelbo Mutter. And the Chelev of a Shlil is Mutter. And why is this? Because Rabbi Yehuda holds that the Isur Gid Anosha doesn't apply to a Shlil. So you're basing yourself on the principle of Shnei Isurim Bahari Adodi Kasi from the fact that Rabbi Yehuda says then the case of a shliel, you also violate the gid of Isur Gid Anasha. Adarabba, Rabbi Yehuda goes on record as saying that there is no Isur Gid Anasha in shliel. Excuse me, so the Gemara says, Hani Mili Gabi Tahora. In the case of a Tahora, Derachmana Omar, the Torah says, V'chol Behema, Bibhema, Babehema Osa Tochelu. And this is the pasuk that teaches us that in the case of a shliel, which is bibehema bibehema, means an animal in another animal, mm-hmm. You're allowed to eat it through the shechita of the mother. That's a whole separate sugya called ben pkua. But in any event, Rabbi Yehuda holds that every shliel is considered in this heter, even and every part of the shliel, even the gid anasha aval bitmeya noheg. There is in fact an Isur Gira Nasha in a Shlil, that Brisa, I should say, that Mishnah, which records Rabbi Yehuda saying that there's no Gira Nasha in a Shlil, that's referring to a Behema Tahora, where the Torah says, V'chol Behema V'Behema Osa Tochelu. And that's a case where the Shechita of the mother was Mater the Vlad. And that's called a ben pkua, as we discussed in a different context. So the shechita, the mother works for the vlad, but in the case of such an animal which is a kosher species and lends itself to shechita, the shechita, the mother works on behalf of the vlad, and that's called shechita saim mahani labas, right? Shechita saim mahani labas, and in such a case, the Torah says that the gid is mutter. Why is the gid
of
this embryo is mut? Because it's a behema tahora.
When you talk about a shlil, the embryo can mean anything unborn. That would be the definition of it.
Any animal that's an embryo and never actually went through the birth process.
That's what I'm saying. Anything,
right? But it's from a behema tahora. Keep in mind.
I understand, but right. My whole question here is whether there's going to be, if we're talking about an embryo, which is.
Okay, but again, in the case of a... So let's just summarize what we said, because we're going to learn a little ksubis now. And what we're saying is that according to Rabbi Yehuda, Eino Chinami, the shlil of a behema tmeya is also b'toras gid. And if it's also b'toras gid, it means that we have the svara that pahadi hadadi kasa, that if two isurim emerge simultaneously, we suspend the principle of Eino Chinami and Eino Chinami. Okay, that's what we'll...